This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
After 2 decades of helping clients battle addiction, a successful therapist succumbs to one himself. He loses everything and ends up destitute in a rundown recovery home populated by a cast of characters straight out of Dickens. Now, Mike Pond has published an account, the descent he took into a life-threatening addiction and the recovery he continues to make. His book is called The Couch of Willingness, An Alcoholic Therapist Battles the Bottle and a Broken Recovery System.
I read The Couch of Willingness and spoke with Michael Pond about the book earlier this week. Here's that interview. You write early in the book, 2001, more warning signs. I began to create little stashes of gin. Summer of 2002, I counted at least 20 wine-tasting parties. I can't stop. Mike, what is happening when a drinker is both aware of warning signs and being unable to stop?
You know, being a clinician and a professional, this was part of the difficulty for me was that, you know, as this thing's happening, I know what's happening to me and I understand it and I have the insight. I do assessments. I've done assessments for addictions, individuals over the years through my practice and all the work I've done, and sometimes insight can be a curse. It's a blessing and a curse. But I knew that, you know, I was now becoming physically addicted. You know, I knew I had the genetic predisposition. I knew that I was building up the tolerance and able to drink, you know, increasingly larger quantities. And the brain chemistry, I knew what was happening there. I knew that, you know, that the neurotransmitters were lower levels, and it was building dopamine for me. It was altering my mood. It was allowing me to escape. You know, and I knew that the kind of work I was doing, you know, I'm dealing with trauma almost on a daily basis and not really taking care of myself. And so this vicarious trauma that we experience as people that do this kind of work was impacting on me. And I was, you know, there was unhappiness in my relationship. It was becoming this habitual compulsive behavior, and I knew that. But because of my position in the community, and we were a highly well-known family, and, you know, I was a professional, and it was really difficult for me to reach out and ask for help. You know, the other piece is that, you know, we were surrounded by alcohol, and this is a resort town in Penticton, and there's, you know, there's always alcohol involved, you know, almost on a daily basis, and many of our friends were in the wine industry, and so there's just continual kind of events and get-togethers where alcohol is involved. I mean, it's a very difficult environment, right, and I was able to hide it so well as well. You know, as most, you know, as you know, most alcoholics get very, very creative at trying to hide this thing. And then when it was really getting extreme, you know, and I was missing work and not going into the office, and then I even went deeper in, and then I started to experience, you know, that stigma and shame that goes with it. And the personal pride, right? So there's all these factors, you see, Kevin, that, you know, it's, as they say, it's a biopsychosocial problem. And my condition was just getting worse and worse and worse with every day.
Hitting bottom is a common term used in alcoholism and recovery and discussion about those topics. Your book describes several bottoms. You panhandle for the first time in White Rock. You become truly homeless. You eventually end up on what you call a couch of willingness at Fresh Start, but you later experience what you call rock bottom, yet you drank yourself to oblivion again later and find yourself fighting for life in intensive care. Tell us about the concept of hitting bottom and what that means in addiction and in alcoholism.
Well, we hear that term a lot. You know, oh, he's one of those guys that has to hit bottom. Oh, he's one of those guys that thinks he's smarter than the program, and he's one of those guys that thinks he can do this on his own, or he has willpower. And the difficulty is it's a relative term, but really, you know, the bottom is death. And I witnessed that in a couple of those recovery homes, and two young men committed suicide and hanged themselves. You know, and when we look at the traditional model that is really deeply rooted in 12-step, you know, that's even reinforced. You know, like when somebody doesn't come to meetings, you can hear kind of the gossip and the talk. Oh, Mike Pond, he's out doing more research. You know, and you know, when we have an illness or condition or disorder, and you have a relapse, let's say with diabetes or cancer, you know, you don't get kicked out of treatment. They ramp it up and it intensifies and the treatment becomes more aggressive. This is the only condition I know is when you get kicked out of treatment when you relapse. You know, and 90% of the programs are the treatment programs are run by lay people. There's no evidence-based treatments. And we know now that it's like any other condition or disorder or disease, even if you believe in that model, that you got to catch it early. Early intervention is the key. And our doctors, who are usually typically the frontline individuals that deal with this, they're not trained in it. So I just was a part of that whole system that is inadequate and, I believe, even broken, you know, which is the subtitle of my book. And again, it's that shame and stigma that's embedded in it. But you know what I'm seeing is it's starting to tip. Since I started writing the book 3 years ago, and in the last 3 years, you can see the system starting to shift and change. And that's a good thing.
I was struck throughout the book, Mike, by the importance of employment to you, your career, your education, your struggle to remain in some kind of employment. It seemed to be for you a lifeline. What did it mean to you during that entire difficult journey?
Well, you know what? Employment is a lifeline, especially if you've been an individual that has worked his entire life and has been productive and has been, you know, providing for his family. And so a part of it, I lost my whole sense of who I was and my identity. And so why I ended up on the streets and then, you know, ended up having to collect social assistance and discovering what it's like to be down on the streets and to be, you know, at that socioeconomic layer in society. I learned how difficult it is, you know, to try to live and exist and, you know, when there's no resources, you know, what it's like to be homeless and broke. I really had never been broke in my life. I started working at 14 part-time jobs, and so I lost a sense of who I was and my sense of worth, and I had no sense of a future self. And so I was frantically trying to, you know, hang on and grab on to any opportunities that would pull me back into being able to get work. And I ended up going back and working on a psychiatric unit as a nurse in a facility that I was the manager of 20 years prior. You know, I learned some powerful lessons and I learned how important, you know, our sense of worth, our sense of purpose, our sense of meaning is. And I think for so many of us that don't have maybe the education and the training that I had, how hopeless it can be, and where, you know, with me even, you know, the only option at some point seemed to be just to end my life.
We know now, obviously, that beyond all odds, you survived this very difficult journey, but many don't. How has what you've been through affected the work you do now? And you mentioned you had some powerful lessons. What is your practice and your work like now?
Well, I've been back in private practice now for 3 years, pretty well full-time. And I do a lot of work with people that suffer from trauma. And, of course, because of the book and my column in the Vancouver Sun, I'm now, you know, involved in kind of an addictions therapist. And so I get a lot of referrals around that. And I do a lot of work with First Nations. And it's really taken me to a whole other profound level of what empathy means. I always thought I had empathy, and I think I did. I don't think you can do this work, you know, successfully without that. So now I really do, you know, when people ask me, you know, you will, you don't really know how I feel. And I look at them, I go, well, actually, I do. You know, and so being able to say that to others and how that really creates that connection that's so important, you know, between the practitioner and the client or the doctor and the patient, you know, that very deep understanding of how they're feeling and what they're going through. You know, and I look at, you know, the marginalized people differently now. And people that read the book say that. They say, oh, I look at the people on the street differently now. You know, I see somebody there, you know, a human being that's hurting and in big trouble. And I also know, you know, now I know the importance of narrative. And I've kind of brought that into my practice and letting people know that, you know, they need to be seen, they need to be heard, and they need to be understood. And I think our system, you know, has taken that away, that ability or opportunity for people to have that, you know, that power to, the power of the narrative and making sense of the senseless. And, you know, it's an importance of family. You know, if my family would have had, you know, good evidence-based treatment or help or support, it makes such a difference. The research is showing now that when you take that family systemic approach, you know, the success rate is so much better. And, you know, it the system needs an overhaul completely from the bottom right to the very top. And hopefully we're at that place. It's exciting times.
Michael Pond, thank you very much for writing The Couch of Willingness, and thanks for taking the time to join us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Kevin. It's my pleasure.
Michael Pond is a therapist practicing in Vancouver. His memoir, The Couch of Willingness, An Alcoholic Therapist Battles the Bottle and a Broken Recovery System, can be found at Amazon and Chapters. You can find out more about Michael Pond online at michaelpond.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.